Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast with Benji Nyson here for Stage 6 of the Tour de France 2021. This show is brought to you by our show partner, Lacolle. A very stereotypical Tour de France bunch sprint day. 160Ks, maybe like one cat full climb, flat as, one intermediate sprint. And finishing in Châteauroux, where Cavendish won his first Tour de France stage back in 2008. But Benji, I was out to lunch. I missed the start of the stage, having a little break. Ellie Salthouse, pro triathlete, is actually from Brisbane. She's come to Andorra for the Andorra 70.3 Ironman this weekend. So just caught up with her. So you're going to have to fill me in on what's going on or what happened at the start of this stage.
I'm afraid you made a mistake going outside because action did happen in the start of the stage. We had a breakaway that was very interesting to the point that I was like, could this breakaway actually win? With 150K to go. So that question arose, which means that it has to be a solid breakaway. That included the following riders. Thomas Gent for Lotto Soudal. No sprinter there. Caleb Ewan's out of the race. George Zimmerman for Wanty. Danny van Poppel, not really the top sprinter here, unfortunately. Then Greg van Avermaet right there trying to go in the breakaway because they don't really have a spear point to go for. Then Niels Paulin, Sagan teammate. Kasper Asgreen, De Koenig, and close in GC. Then we have Jonas Rickard, teammate of Mathieu van der Poel. And Søren Krogh Andersen for DSM, teammate of Kees Bol, together with Tom Skuins. Now, this breakaway group has issues because we have the yellow jersey in the hands of Mathieu van der Poel. And Rickard is in the breakaway with a rider that could take the yellow jersey if the gap exceeds a minute, Asgreen. So Rickard decides, I'm not riding with you. Perhaps here or there, try a little bit, but then I stop and sit at the back. The rest doesn't like that. You know that. And we've also got Søren Krogh Andersen, who, surprisingly, doesn't work well to get a reader. Why? Takes over for half a second because they have the legendary Kees Bol in the back.
Oh, my God.
I don't know why he doesn't ride. Like, I think that if you have got Kees Bol in the team that rides one good sprint in the season, no offense, because I do appreciate him if he's in his good
intended
day.
All offense intended for
okay.
me.
Søren Krogh Andersen, he should have been riding that. And you can't trust Kees Bol every single sprint. And I think you have a better chance with Søren Krogh Andersen in the breakaway than you have with Kees Bol in the sprint, personally. So a lot of tactics going on, and the attacks start because you've got Thomas De Gendt and Van Avermaet that realize, well, the peloton has riders riding for sprinters that don't have people in the breakaway. Groupama once again missed it in the same fashion in that Sagan stage in the Giro last year, where they had to start chasing with the entire team because they had nobody in the breakaway, and De Koenig and Alpecin were not going to pace. Arkea went to the front as well, obviously not for Buhani, but for Nairo in green, we all know that, and they started pacing like a madman in the peloton as well. Those two teams were setting the tempo, together with Victor Kampenaerts for the legendary Malaysia sprinter Max Walscheid. Sorry, but I think if you've got Max Walscheid in the team, there's no point in doing that. And some people would say, it's better to have at least someone at the front of the race. And if you don't have anyone in the break, perhaps use Kampenaerts to close that down. But I think that there's other stages then if you don't have a good situation right now and you don't have a sprinter that is of a decent caliber. So my question is to you, if you were Søren Krogh Andersen, I think you would probably pace at that point. And what do you see in the situation? Because I, for example, see Kasper Asgreen in that front group imploding it from the inside. But if he's not there, the Clerc is spacing at the back. So I think this is destined to go wrong, right?
Yeah, I guess it would come down to would Quickstep really think that Asgreen has got a good enough chance to win from that break? Because, listen, the sprint field's been decimated here. We've basically got Cavendish. We'll get to Alpecin in a second. We're going to have to give them a proper roasting. But, yeah, no Ewan, no on-form Ackermann, Jakobsen, obviously last year. So not just recent things. And then Groenewegen. So a lot of the people who a year ago would have been the best sprinters in the world are not here. So Cav's got a legitimate, you know, odd makers gave him 30-35% chance of winning, if not higher. Askren against Søren Krah, Rikard, etc. I'm not sure it is that. So you're right. I think it might not have ever had a chance to succeed. But if I was a DSM, I for sure would have paced, because Case Bowles' chance of winning is like 3%, 2% if he, you know, he gets that magic day right. But yeah, I missed that. I saw it afterwards. But FDJ had to use a lot of work. They apparently were the main team having to bring it back, Benji, because they missed it. Yep. And they want them after the sprint.
Yes, indeed. They were trying to pace a lot to get with Arkea, and that helped, but it wasn't their pacing that was closing it down necessarily. Of course, it helped, but it was mainly the tactics at the front. We had Thomas Gendt and Van Avermaet keeping up attacks to try and drop Asgreen. Then they had a bit of a gap on Asgreen, Squints, and Søren Krah Andersen. Asgreen had to pace that back to the front of the race because Søren Krah Andersen didn't want to help Asgreen to the front of the race either. So it was all just a mess. And then when it came back together, Van Avermaet attacked like four times to get away. The fourth time it did work. Thomas de Gendt tried to follow but didn't. And the rest of the group just faltered and fell to the peloton. And Van Avermaet was alone for a bit. And then Roger Kluge attacked from the back in the peloton. And they had a two-man breakaway for the rest of the day. And then the breakaway action was basically done until the intermediate sprint. And we've got a lot to say about that one as well, to be honest.
So Mirku's the only lead-out man involved in the intermediate sprint, really, in the final, and he's obviously leading out Cavendish, who's in the green jersey, trying to take out more points. So they're sprinting for the third, because obviously Van Avermaet and Kluger have taken 1-2. And Mirku, and he's always done this, like this is not a new thing, but when he leads out Cavendish, he drops him off this time in the middle because he's come round, or whoever was on the left. Sagan is coming up the inside on the barrier straight line, and Mirku, Sagan's coming quick. He timed it really well. And Mirku basically just swings out from the middle of the road to the left, completely blocks Sagan. Sagan has to break. And Cavendish didn't really open up the legs either. It seemed like he didn't know Colbrelli was coming on the right-hand side. Colbrelli on the other side of the road, I think, actually took the IS, but Cavendish was like second or third. Buani as well was getting into it a bit with Cavendish, trying to protect his space. Again, I thought Cavendish came across Buani's front wheel more than the other way around. But what do you do with Mirku, Benji? Because, okay, say the UCI eventually does think, oh, this is actually dangerous, shoving, you know, cutting people off into the barriers when they're sprinting. Say they actually get around to that, you relegate him, so what? Cav still gets, you know, gets the lead out. The only thing I can think of is a yellow card system where he gets a yellow here. Okay, you didn't crash anyone. It's a bit dirty, but okay, not the end of the world. Yellow card. If you get another yellow during the tour, you're out of the tour, and then Cav loses his prime lead out man, and that's a sufficient disincentive to keep doing this sort of thing. Do you think that would work?
I think that's indeed. Well, I don't know if that system would be covering all the plot holes, but I think that it would definitely be a better system than what we have now, because right now we've got punishments for riders that don't do anything. And if you punish Mirku there, well, then the other people get 2 extra points and he doesn't get anything. So the people who have him in Velo Games are the ones that are honestly the biggest victims here, which is probably not the people you want to punish here. It's the people that are doing the relegations themselves and just, the deviations, not relegations themselves. And I think that Mirku should be relegated for what he did. I just don't know if that would even do something for him. So, like, there's no applicable thing to him that I see that you can do to him right now that would be efficient and disincentivize him to do it again in the future, unless you've got a different system.
All right, so this turned out to be a pretty regulation sprint stage after that. Cav extending his lead in the green jersey over, well, Alpecin sent Philipsen to do the intermediate sprint, so Merlier is definitely not going for the green jersey. You can write that down already. And I mean, we'll talk about that again, as I said, later. Before we get into the run into the final, I want to mention our show partner, Lacole, who I said at the top of the show. They produce performance cycling apparel made at the base of Monte Grappa. They have the Monte Grappa collection recently released. I think the day before Fortunato won the Adriatica Ionica Stage 2 finish up Monte Grappa, which of course you all watched, Monte Zonkland winner. They have that collaboration with Alessandro Balan, World Championships winner for Italy in the 2000s. So go and check that kit out if you're interested, there's also the Project Aero McLaren collaboration and their new summer lightweight collection. If you want to pick up any of their kit, you can use code LRTDF20, all caps LRTDF20, for 20% off all Lacol items. So thanks to Lacol for supporting the show. But the run into the finish, Benji, I mean, it didn't happen today because it was a tied Kluger and a tied Greg Van Avermaet, but the sprint teams really, I think there's going to be a sprint stage this Tour de France where they're not going to catch the break on a regular. They really are struggling to catch the breaks. And we saw in the post-race interview, Cavendish.
Struggling or on purpose?
No, I think they're just not strong enough to, I think a stronger break, like if Van Moer had another rider, they win, or maybe they would cat and mouse. But if I genuinely think that a bigger break of four or five riders, that they might not be able to bring them back because, yeah, Konovalovos is not there for FDJ. De Klerk doesn't do that sort of job in the final. There's no Lampard for De Koenig. It's really like they're going to make Alaphilippe do that sort of job. He did at the end for Van Moer, but yeah, I think there's no real big trains and a break could win later. But who was taking it up eventually? I think the gap was like 30 seconds with 10Ks to go. So what, they kept it pretty tight anyway.
Yeah, they did, and it was a rider from DSM that was at the front with Alaphilippe in his wheel waiting to take over, and it was a DSM rider that did quite a long while, I think until like 1.3, 1.2 and a half kilometers, 1.250, that's what I mean. And that's where Alaphilippe started taking over because he is indeed part of the train here, and that will play into his GC performances eventually, I'm afraid, but he is performing for Cavendish, and Cavendish is probably very happy about that. And that brings the train to the front. But while De Koenig was on the left side of the road, setting up that train with Alaphilippe at the front, you had on the right side of the road about five riders back, perhaps. Mathieu van der Poel launching the entire train of Alpecin, where you've got Ricard in second wheel, you've got Merlier as lead out, and Philipsen as a sprinter. Were you surprised?
Yeah, obviously. Like, what are they doing? Like, Merlier's the quickest on a flat sprint. Like, an account that I follow called Send Rider to the Right Races. It's a really salty Twitter account, sort of man after my own heart. You know, said, when I was at basketball camp in elementary school, we were told that every member on our team had to touch the ball before we could shoot to keep up team morale. Alpes and Phoenix seem to be operating the same way at the Tour de France, and 100% right. Like, they're disrespecting their sponsors, Benji, by not having not just the best sprinter on their team, the best sprinter in the race left, flat sprinter Tim Merlier, is quick. We saw what he did on stage, whatever, the first stage he won at this Tour de France. And, yeah, it's just weird. If I'm Merlier, I mean, he's obviously a nice guy, friends with Philipsen, and they want to share the wins around. Mm-hmm. But Cavendish destroyed Philipsen at Tour of Turkey. He smashed him in stage four. I don't see why that's going to change. When Merlier does the lead out for Philipsen, he pretty much puts him in the red because he's quicker than Philipsen. So, yeah, I'm surprised, Benji, is my short answer to why Alpecin are doing that. I mean, if I'm their sponsors or their DS, I say, okay, guys, you had a couple of chances, Philipsen, cut the shit. It's time to go back for Merlier lead out. Or do you think I'm being too harsh?
No, I agree. I think that despite it perhaps being a contractual matter or a promise that they did to give him chances in the races that he goes to after his transfer, it is the better performance option to go for Merlier. You've got a better chance of winning with Tim Merlier on a flat sprint. You've got a better chance of winning with Philipsen on an uphill sprint. And that's how you should use them. And right now they're using them to make everybody happy, which is for the team itself probably good for the happiness in the team and so forth, but I think they'd be just as happy if Merlier gets another two stage wins instead of getting second and third every time right now. So I don't know. I think that they've got two very strong sprinters, two of the top 8-9 sprinters here, but I don't think Philipsen is in the top three of those, and that's why I wouldn't go for him, while Merlier is perhaps in the top two of the sprinters at this Tour de France right now.
The only thing I can think of to justify it is they think Cav might OTL and they're trying to get Philipsen to win the green jersey. Yeah. And that's the only thing I can think of because he's second in the green points. But continuing on with the sprint, Wout van Aert is, what, the second bunch sprint he's contesting this year after Tirreno Adriatico Stage 1, which he won ahead of Caleb Ewan. So he, Turnison brought him up, but then there was no Turnison left to help him navigate. He was in the wind a lot, Wout van Aert having to sort of fight for his own wheels. We saw that obviously Quickstep took prime position at the front. It was Fred Wright leading out from like 2Ks to go for Bahrain Victorious for Colbrelli to come between 5th and 10th, or didn't even come in the top 10. So, I think Fred Wright is straight up quicker than Colbrelli in a flat sprint. But anyway, they did that. They definitely saved Quickstep's train. Alpecin don't take control. They bring up their lead out late. So Schelde-Price the other day, they bring up their lead out late. And that's what they did again with almost too many riders. MVDP, then Ricard, then Merlier on the right-hand side. And they're going for Philipsen. There's no Wout van Aert at all. FDJ had squeezed Case Bowl pretty aggressively off Cavendish's wheel with like a K to go. And so they've got Dumas sitting on Cavendish's wheel. Two trains are going up on either side of the road. They then come together with quick Alpecin coming up quickly on the right-hand side. But then basically Cav comes off Merku's wheel, jumps onto Philipsen's wheel, Philipsen's wheel. Merlier's going sprinting up the middle. Philipsen sprints to the left-hand side of him. Cav goes to the right-hand side into clear air of Tim Merlier. You basically got Philipsen and Cav on the right, either side of Merlier, who still thinks he's doing the lead out at this point. Cavendish going way quicker than Philipsen. He comes from the right-hand side of the road. He's launched a sprint, he's going right straight to the light, and then he cuts across Merlier. He does this because he's trying to cut off the draft if anyone's in his back wheel. So he's trying to move across in front of Merlier. We see this all the time. And Merlier has to take pretty evasive action, nearly crashes, has to brake or whatever. But Cavendish going way quicker. And he almost comes together with Philipsen and sort of Bouani move over to the left to Philipsen was also coming a bit to the right as well. But Cavendish wins the stage easily. Really, ahead of Philipsen, Bouani, Arnaud Demar 4th, Sagan 5th, Case Bowl 6th, Merlier 7th after doing the lead out, Wout van Aert 8th, Matthews 9th, Pedersen 10th. They did have turns and Sturven doing the lead out for Pedersen, but he just doesn't seem to have it this year. So obviously no changes to GC at all. Still Van der Poel 8 seconds ahead of Pogacar, 30 ahead of Wout van Aert. What do you make of the sprint, Benji? You think Cavendish is just way better than Philipsen, right?
Yeah, I think he is. Quite simple as that. I think that there's some shady action going on in the sprint today. And I think from like a lot of people, not just from one person. But I do think we need to take a look into the top four riders actually of this sprint. We've got Merlier, Philipsen and Cavendish in this sprint. And I feel like there's a lot of pushing and shouldering going on in the last section, but also endangering and deviating. And I think we have perhaps an unlikable take about today, and that's the fact that I would dare to say, despite Cavendish being my podcast pick for the stage, and I love to have him win on the stage, I would have relegated him for the move he did on Merlier in the final sprint.
100%. It's textbook relegation. People, you're not going to like it, and I know that. Benji and I, people might say we never say thing. You know, we're populist. We know people aren't going to like hearing that, but we can. You know, if it was Sagan, we would say it. And
if Bouhanni was there.
If Bouhanni did Bouhanni this, was out. Mate, GC and Eurosport commentary, they would have filed a petition to have him removed from the Tour de France. Let me just remind people of the rules. Riders shall be strictly forbidden to deviate from the lane they selected. Okay? Cavendish has selected his lane when he's sprinting. A lane is straight to the line. He's on the right-hand side of Merlier. He's like on the far – he's several bike widths to the right of the dashed line in the middle of the road. That's the lane he's in when launching the sprint. He deviates from that lane after he's launched because he goes back to the left. He then starts sprinting diagonally. Okay, so tick one, he's deviated from his lane. Tick two, he's launched his sprint. I mean, he's literally going straight to the line, no one in front of him. And in doing so, endangering others. Was Merlier endangered because, you know, he had to take evasive action? Merlier was sprinting straight. Or going straight, and he has to take evasive action, nearly got chopped, nearly crashed, tick three. So to me, just textbook relegation. Like it's what rationale? Why couldn't Cavendish sprint straight, Benji? Why couldn't he sprint straight when he went to the right of Merlier?
I think some arguments that I received is that he shouldn't get DQ'd because Merlier also moves to the other side and Philipsen also moves in that sprint, deviates. So you can't DQ Cavendish or relegate Cavendish because someone else is doing so. I disagree with that because...
Benji, my neighbor stole an apple from Carrefour. So when I stole some pineapple juice, I'm not allowed to go to prison.
I was going to go for a much more extreme one. For example, I kill somebody, but the person I killed is a murderer. Should I go to jail or not? Well, probably.
Right, the public definitely not a good one, because half the public would be like, nah, you don't go to jail.
Depends on the person, I guess. Anyway, yeah. Like, looking at it, I think that there's two situations. You have the one where Cavendish moves to the left, endangers Merlier. You are endangered if you have to move your bike within like a second, a meter to the left to avoid crashing. Like, let's be real, that's endangerment. And the fact that he's going faster than Merlier doesn't matter, because some people are saying, yeah, but he's a lead out in this situation. But
yeah, he's a subhuman. He's a lead out man, Benji. He's a subhuman. He's not a sprinter.
He's a peasant. Nah, the thing is, like, he moves to the left into Merlier. Merlier being a lead out doesn't change the fact that in the rules they are said to be others, not sprinters, for example, endangering others. That could be a bloody, I don't know, a UCI commissaire standing there. If you endanger him, then you're still breaking the deviation rule. So it doesn't matter if it's a sprinter or a lead out or a domestique or a breakaway rider that is falling behind in the final sprint, like a Brent van Moer a few days ago. If you do the same and endanger somebody, then it applies. Now, there's the other example of Philipsen and Cavendish almost clashing into each other in the final 100 meters. I don't believe they that should be a relegation, because they both move into each other. And while they are basically... technically,
Philipsen wasn't endangered.
Yeah, they weren't endangered, but they both move into each other and just stop just before they endanger each other, I guess.
Also, I mean, credits to Merlier. You know, what Merlier should have done, Benji? And this is why this is the difference, and people won't notice the difference between Mercu and Merlier. Merlier is a sprinter, not a lead-out man. Merlier should basically have chosen the side that Philipsen's sprinting to and then continued like Mercu did at the intermediate sprint, sprinting towards the barriers on his right-hand side and closing off Cavendish's angle, making Cavendish go the long way.
Yeah, but what if he endangers Cavendish then and crashes him? We don't want to support that either.
No, I'm just saying.
It depends on the situation.
I'm just saying that's what
Mercu would do.
Mercu did that at the intermediate sprint and it costs again. It's just the difference between Mercu and Merlier. Merlier is sprinting absolutely straight and he thought he was still doing the lead out and he nearly got chopped. So listen, let us know down below if you see it any differently. I see it as one rider sprinting straight, mm-hmm. the other sprinting for no reason diagonally, and he nearly crashes him. So
yep, I agree. And the thing is, like, we're open to seeing your perspective on it. I think that a lot of people might disagree, but I think that quite a few people might disagree from a standpoint of wanting to see Cavendish win here. And like, I wanted to see Cavendish win here 100%, but I won't become biased just because of that. When it comes to applying the deviation rule, that could endanger riders in the future.
Just replace his name with Bouhanni.
Yeah, and then he's DQ'd. Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, that's enough on that. You know, that's our sprint deviations is our cross to bear. But yeah, we're just trying to be consistent, even if it's maybe not popular. Otherwise, Cavendish, he still is. I mean, I'm not taking anything away from him. He's better than Philipsen. He still would have won. It's nothing to do with whether he would have won or lost. FDJ Benji with the Mai came fourth today. Guarnieri crashed in the final, his last lead out man. DeMar's not looking, I don't know, is his form different to last year, or is the difference that we have better sprinters here? Because last year he just beat Sagan four times behind him. Today he still beat Sagan. The problem is there's better people here.
I think a slight combination of both. I think that DeMar has not been on the level of last year this entire year. I think he had a bit of a sparkle during Valenciana, but then again, that was during that rainy stage where half of the sprinters didn't feel like sprinting, like Gelabuin that day.
He sprinted with an open rain jacket.
Exactly. So I think that DeMar is just not as good as last year. Quite simple as that. And it's also, he lost Guarnieri in the final corner, or one of the corners where he apparently got touched and he had to go straight because of that. So there's a lot of points to it. I think that DeMar's not on the level of last year, and perhaps he might come true in the final 2 weeks. It's still possible. Hope to see at least one good DeMar sprint this Tour de France, but so far it hasn't been that.
All right. Tomorrow's stage is the first day. We think a breakaway has a really good chance. It's 250Ks, one of the longest stages in the Tour de France for quite a while. A lot of fatigue, surely, before the final mountain stage. First mountain stage on stage 8, and maybe the concerns about that will nerf this stage. But yeah, it's pretty flat before the climbing kicks off with 160Ks done. So maybe a break of strong rouleurs will go. They'll have a chance to build up a pretty big buffer. Certainly if I was Van der Poel and Van Aert, be trying to get into the break, maybe Van Aert's a little bit aggressive. Intermediate sprinters before really any climbing with 114 done. And then they got like 3Ks, 5%, 2.6Ks, 4%, 2Ks, 4%. What else? Côte de la Croix de la Libération, 4.7Ks, 5.3%, but the last 2.5Ks is 2.5 at 7.3. Then Signal du Champ, it's actually quite, it's a bit of fake news climb actually, Benji, 5.7Ks, 5.5%, but it has a descent kilometre in the middle of it. So the last 2Ks, I mean, according to La Flamme Rouge, the last K and a half is at 11%. So that's no joke. And that's about that crest, 18Ks before the line. There's then another little roller, 2.5Ks at 5.1%. This is a hard stage. And yeah. Really, I think Alaphilippe would be the favorite for the stage out of the bunch, or a pure puncher just because of Signal du Champ. The problem is it's so far from the line. Would he be able to gap MVDP enough there? But yeah, that's a really steep K. How do you see this playing out? Do you see basically UAE not wanting any part of this stage and letting the break go to 10, 12 minutes?
I think if you're UAE, you're not trying to control the stage at the start. Depends on who goes in the breakaway, of course. If someone dangerous goes in, then you step in. But I wouldn't be taking up control that is not necessary on this stage. Definitely with the team they have, they might need to spare their riders for the upcoming stages. I do think that Pogacar will have to come into action that day because I think people are going to attack him. Signal du Champ, definitely. And it might not be solely Alaphilippe who does it. I think that it wouldn't surprise me if Jumbo tries something on this stage. I don't think it will work because Pogacar is good at these kind of stages as well. We saw that at Tirreno. I think that it feels more like a little classic in the Tour de France, and that's what I like about this stage. When it comes to the breakaway, I just don't know who would try and catch them. Would De Koenig be interested in setting up pace throughout the entire thing with De Klerk? I don't know if that's warranted. I think that perhaps they should try, but I don't know. I don't know if that's worthy with Cavendish being there and having to try and get him out of OTL with the entire team for the rest of the Tour de France. Might not be willing
to.
He won't
OTL this, surely.
Not at this stage, no, but they would try and save energy to try and go harder on the coming stages. And that's why I think that it's more likely that a break wins this. But we had Van der Poel for this one, and I would love to see Van der Poel win another stage personally, just out of complete pure bias of seeing the yellow jersey win a stage. So I'm going to stick with Van der Poel. I don't know how. I don't believe he can survive Signal du Champ against Alaphilippe.
No.
But I'm going to say it anyway.
I think three teams should really be trying something today, tomorrow. And I don't think Jumbo-Visma should, or I wouldn't blame them if they don't, mainly because we still do you really want to tempt fate with Roglic's injuries? Is it, you know, maybe you do want him to rest up a little bit too? You've lost Hersink. Wout's also coming into, he's not in his best form, it seems. Is this really the place to try something? The team, obviously, the best team for this stage is clearly De Koenig Quickstep. They have Asgreen, fantastic on a 2K, 5% sort of climb. Ballerini can get over them. Cattaneo and Three Stevenens, of course, can do a crazy pace on Signal du Champ for Alaphilippe to attack. So they are clearly the best team for this stage. Ineos, they also have an incredibly strong rouleurs-type team. Kwiatkowski, Rowe, Van Baarle, Castroviejo, even Gagan Hart, I think is really, really strong. And those guys also took the TT off, as Benji observed yesterday. Is this a stage where they can try and set up Carapaz to take some time back on Pogacar, on Signal du Champ earlier? I think so. Maybe they will try it. Remember Theo Gegenhardt, he lit up Liège-Bastogne-Liège on the, what's the second to last climb, Benji? Redoute?
Yes.
Single last climb, he lit it up, then Carapaz attacked. Do we see something similar in this sort of Ardennes-style long finish from Ineos? I'd like to see it, and I think it's certainly possible. As well as Astana, Fuglsang, Aramburu, Freile, Izagirre, Lutsenko, very strong team. The medium mountains is where Astana is strongest as compared to UAE as a complete team. I think in the high mountains, I mean, what's Jon Izagirre going to do to Pogacar in the high mountains? Nothing. But
It rains?
Yeah, maybe. In this sort of medium mountain stage, it's where having a satellite rider can maybe help. So hopefully, and Benji and I have been bigging up this stage so much in the last 2 weeks. We're like, it's going to be a raid. But, yeah, I think probably 65-35, there's just a 10-minute break goes of someone. Who do you think can win from a break, Benji? Magnus Cort, for starters. Aaron Baru, if he went in the break, but maybe they won't.
Yeah, but I had Magnus Cort for the day after. I can't just – no, I don't know if I had Magnus Cort for
no,
the day after.
No, you did not. I think I talked you out of it.
Did you? Or was it Valgren that you talked me out of? I don't know anymore.
I tried to, yeah.
I have to check back on the comment that is somewhere below the preview video. But I think that when it comes to the breakaway, we're indeed looking at an Astana and so forth. But then again, they've got Lutsenko up there. So perhaps they might try something with Lutsenko on a stage like this.
Valverde from the break? He's on 10 minutes. They got to send him in the break.
That would be amazing.
this is the perfect stage for Valverde. The break is already at 10 minutes.
Van Avermaet
as well is good. So, yeah, there can be some strong riders in that breakaway. Would you think Van der Poel will go break or no? Nah, he'll stay in the GC group.
He won't be allowed in the GC group. Yeah. I think so. And then you're looking at like Conti teams perhaps, but Boasen Hagen, someone like him try, but he hasn't been up to standards in a while. I think that Wanty will set someone in the breakaway. Loic Vliegen would be a nice name for that breakaway.
He's good.
Michael Gogol, yes indeed.
No, Gogol's good in this sort of terrain. Buggy, not shown much this year. I like Schelling in the break. He surely will be trying to get into it as well for KOM points.
Dylan Teuns?
God, he's not shown much, has he?
Yeah, but Haig's out. They have to try something. Bilbao, I don't know where he is at NGC, stuff like that. And then you're looking at a Lotto Soudal, who of their team could go in the breakaway and do something there. Is Sweeney a decent hilly rider?
I think Signal Duchamp, he'd be struggling from the break. Yeah, I mean, Bahrain victorious. Where are they on GC? Mohoric is at 5 minutes. That's no help. Turns is at 7:25. That's okay. Bilbao's at 3:24. So unfortunately, they got a lot of guys in the in the too close zone, but also not competitive on.
I'm switching.
Yep.
Benoit Cosnefroy.
Oh,
I don't know why.
It's a great shout. Yeah.
It just feels Cosnefroy-ish.
It's maybe a little bit hard, but then it's kind of the last climb's not so hard. Yeah, he's way back on GC. I'd love to see it as well. I think it could be a break. Could be the GC group. It's a long stage. We'll surely be watching the last two, 3 hours.
He's telling, dude.
I already said him three times.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I completely missed that.
He'll, of course, be in the break. But anyway, we watch it. Sagan? Maybe.
I don't know.
I'd love to see Sagan in this break. I think he should. He always surprises us at how good he can climb in a breakaway because we always see him, trying to climb against pure punchers. He can't, obviously, I don't think, win. Like, you don't think Sagan can make it over from the GC group? To contest the finish? Colbrelli?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Maybe Bahrain. I think Bahrain should probably just pace, to be honest, and go for the stage win. But anyway, that's our preview of tomorrow's stage. We'll wrap up a little bit. We'll wrap up now and we'll see you with the recap tomorrow. Ciao.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.